I'm going to read the section from Mark. Then a poor widow came by and dropped in 2 small coins. I tell you the truth, Jesus said, this poor widow has given more, but she, poor as she is, has given everything she has. I've just dumped a PowerPoint on Stefan at short notice. Let's see if he's found it. There we go. Fantastic. So we're looking this morning at this topic of what are you giving? We've talked about paying, we've talked about owing, we've talked about earning, and so on. Today we're talking about the topic of giving. And we've just heard that line from the end of that reading there. Poor as she is, this woman, this widow, has given everything she has. This last couple of weeks, we've been watching quite a lot of the Olympics. Have you been watching the Olympics? No, some say no, some say yes. Yes. Have you been staying up late? No. Sorry? Did you? You stayed up for that? Good for you, Don. You just woke up. Put it on. There he is. Brilliant. So we've been watching the Olympics, haven't we? We've been watching people like Bradley Wiggins winning his gold medal. That was funny. So was the reaction of his other teammates when they were on the podium when he did that. It's quite funny. But when you know, when they do about these Olympic medals and so on, they talk about what it takes to be an Olympic champion. They talk about how they have given everything, you know, to be there. They've sacrificed family time. They've sacrificed other things. They've sacrificed in their bodies. You know, you're not allowed to eat certain things, and you go on these really strict training and diet programs, and you know, it's exhausting and so on and so on, and they're just giving everything in order to win. We're talking about giving, and Jesus talks about this woman giving everything. It just made me think a little bit about me. You know, what would giving everything look like for me? How do I give? I expect that most of you give. Maybe you give to church, maybe you give to other things as well. But what would it look like for you to give everything? What if you gave all of your income in a month? This woman puts a couple of coins in the treasury. What would it look like for you to give your entire income for a month? What would it look like for you to give everything that you own? All the money in your bank accounts, all the wealth in your house. What would that look like? Just imagine the noughts. That'd be quite something, wouldn't it? But, you know, we've come across times already where Jesus has said to people, you know, go and sell everything that you have and give it to the poor. Wow. That's a big sum, isn't it? So giving seems to be quite a big theme of Jesus's. But I face this dilemma, I don't know about you, how much should I give? And I just came up with a list of things, times when I give. A bucket collector in the street. How much should I give to the bucket collector in the street? How much should I give to this church? Because this is where I come to church, this is my church family, this is where I'm a part of. How much should I give when I go to another church, when I'm away from this church? Even though I'm still giving to this church, I just happen to be away from this church. How much should I give then? What about when there's a whip round for a friend or a work colleague? How much should I give into that? A special appeal like a famine? What about then? How much do I give then? What about Christian charities? What about if they're not Christian charities? Does that make a difference to how much I should give? How do I give then? What about sponsoring adults? And what about sponsoring kids when they do their, you know, sponsored runs or walks or whatever it is around the school grounds? How much should I give? Because I can't give everything to all of them. That doesn't make any sense. So how much should I give? Let's have another little look at this widow. I'll come to the picture in a moment. I've evidently forgotten to analyse that. This little story, quite well known, often referred to as the widow's mite. We know she's a poor widow, so maybe she did have mites. But usually when they talk about... Sorry. It's just I know it's a bad joke. But these coins that she puts in were often referred to as mites. They're pennies. They're practically worthless. They are the equivalent of the coppers in your pocket. The value of this is next to nothing. But there's two questions that strike me as I read this passage. One is, how does she come to be so poor in the first place? And the second is this. Who told her to give up her last pennies? You probably recognise from years gone by the Green Cross Code Man. Do you remember him? And the Green Cross Code was... What was the Green Cross Code? How to cross the road. How do we cross the road safely? Stop, look and listen. The trouble with the story of the widow's mite is that we all... I say we all. Maybe you don't. But many of us know it so well that we don't stop to look and listen. We just jump to what we already think the story's about. I've forgotten the guy's name, but actually he was the guy that played Darth Vader, and then they dubbed his voice. David Prowse, thank you very much. And a version of R2-D2 next to him, it seems, as well. So the question I'm asking is, are we in danger this morning of perpetuating a myth? What myth? The myth of the widow's faith. Have a look at the story with me. Jesus draws attention to the widow's poverty three times. Luke uses three different words for poor. Luke wants us to be in no... Wants us to be absolutely sure that this woman is very, very poor. She's not just counted amongst the people that society might have thought of as poor. He's using three different words to tell us that she is poor. That she is literally down to her last beans. So we should be thinking extreme poverty here. Not that she's just a bit short, but this is extreme poverty. Everything that she has, Jesus says she gives. You know, literally that says... her whole life. You know, a few weeks back we talked about the lost son, the prodigal son. At the start of that story, the father divides his wealth between them. Well, the word is life. The word is livelihood. Yeah? His whole estate, he divides it between his sons. So when Jesus is talking about giving everything that she's got, he means everything that she's got. Her entire livelihood, everything in all the world, consists of these coins that she is putting into this treasury. It's the complete opposite of what the rich are doing. Jesus saying they've given a tiny part of their surplus. Here's what I need to live on. Here's the bit left over. I'm going to give some of that. Instead, she's got this much to live on and she gives the entire amount. The reason I'm saying look carefully here is because the danger is we're perpetuating the myth that Jesus is praising her great faith in God by giving these coins away in order to provide for her needs. We're romanticising this story. We're ascribing to her this motive of faith in God and hope and his provision and everything that Luke does not mention and Jesus doesn't speak about. Many times Jesus praises people's faith in the gospel. Do you remember the woman with her jar of perfume? And Jesus says, your faith has saved you, go in peace. Because she's taken this jar and she's anointed his feet and all the rest of it. Jesus doesn't do that. Instead, in this comparison, the rich giving out of their surplus, her giving everything that she has got, he is shaming the rich. And he is highlighting the awful, terrible sacrifice this widow is making. She's giving up the tiny amount that she has to live on. If we do perpetuate the myth that what she's doing is good, what we're saying is that it's good to give everything you have to a religious institution. Because that's the only application there can be for me and you. I was reading a BBC article a week before we were away about a charity worker. And this charity was working in Malawi. He was local, he was a Malawian man, if that's the right word. But this charity, their local staff were expected to pay 50% out of their income that they promised them to a group in Mexico. And this was a way for them to siphon off UK aid into Mexico. This group in Mexico, they set up the charity, they get people to work for them, then they say you've got to give 50% of your money to us, and they get rich and they live on a lovely, posh, marble swimming pool compound in Mexico, far away from Malawi. The Department for International Development is now investigating. Because taking vast amounts of money off people in the name of religion or some other unaccountable higher purpose is exactly what Jesus is objecting to. So let's not perpetuate this myth. Sorry, I should have brought these up. So is she a beautiful sight? This woman giving her last coins into the treasury? Or is she a pitiable one? In the sense that she should not have to do this. Of course, nothing like this would happen today, would it? Wouldn't really happen like this. You know, charities, whoever, making their money off widows. Ever see this story in the news? The story of Olive Cook? That's it, Bristol. So I've just altered this slightly to shorten it, but this comes off the BBC website. A 92-year-old who killed herself after suffering from depression and insomnia was feeling overwhelmed by charity requests, the report has said. Olive Cook's details were on file with 99 charities, and in 1 year she received 466 mailings, the Fundraising Standards Board found. Mrs. Cook from Bristol was known as one of the West Country's longest-serving poppy sellers, collecting money for the Royal British Legion for 76 years. The investigation, which involved 1,442 charities, has a number of findings, including the mailings Mrs. Cook received trebled from 119 in the year 2000 to a peak of 466 in 2014. 24 of the 99 charities had passed on her contact details. 70 of those charities had obtained her details from a third party. And only 14 of the 99 offered a specific opt-out opportunity in their mailings so that she didn't have to keep receiving from them. The chair of the investigation said Mrs. Cook was not alone. Her experiences were echoed in many complaints that we received following her death. Mrs. Cook's family had previously said the charity requests she received, while intrusive, weren't to blame for her death. This is a poor widow, isn't it? And that's what's happening to her. Let me read to you the other verses that I included in the reading for today. These are the verses that come immediately before the widow's offering. So listen carefully again to these. Then with the crowds listening, Jesus turned to his disciples and said, "Beware of the teachers of religious law, for they like to parade around in flowing robes and love to receive respectful greetings as they walk in the marketplaces, and how they love the seats of honour in the synagogues and the head table at banquets. Yet they shamelessly cheat widows out of their property and then pretend to be pious by making long prayers in public. Because of this, they will be severely punished." Jesus criticizes these people, these teachers of religious law, for cheating widows out of their property. Okay, literally, if you've got the New International Version of the Bible in front of you, you'll see it says, "Devour the homes of widows." That's exactly the right metaphor. That's exactly what Jesus is saying. As if their whole house was made of sweeties in the Brothers Grimm stories, and the religious teachers come in and just devour the lot. These religious teachers, they love honour for themselves. Do you see that? These respectful greetings, they love wearing these flowing robes that make them appear very special. They live seats of honours in the synagogue, head tables at banquets. They're the sort of people that would walk into a snazzy restaurant and click their fingers, and all of a sudden there'd be a table by the window in the best position. You know? It's those types of things. And yet they shamelessly cheat widows out of their property and pretend to be pious. Made me think a bit about this. Just before we went on holiday, there was the business of David Cameron and the honours list that he had put forward at the point of resigning as Prime Minister. The list that included Samantha Cameron's hairstylist. Public honours for the person who does her hair. Fantastic. Great idea. And also a high honour for the guy that had donated lots and lots of millions of pounds to the Conservative Party. So, you know, again, brilliant. Just, that's exactly what public honours are for, aren't they? I'm sure those two people are individuals. They might be perfectly nice, very decent people. So I'm not getting at them at all. I'm getting at the system. Because the problem is that the system Jesus is criticising is about cheating widows out of property. You have some guys in these flowing robes, and you get these widows ending up in poverty. There's something wrong with the system. They're morally bankrupt, these religious teachers. You see what Jesus says about them there, pretending to be pious and making long prayers in public. But the story of them in the Luke's Gospel as well. Jesus forgives the paralyzed man and comes down through the roof on his mat. Do you remember that story? They hate Jesus for that. Luke tells us that. Chapter 5, verse 21. Jesus hangs out with sinners. Like his brand new disciple, Levi, or Matthew. And they object. Can't do that. They complain about it again at the start of Luke 15, and Jesus launches into the stories of the lost coin and the lost son and the lost sheep. And he's making the point, and they're just objecting. They're enraged at him for healing a man's hand on the Sabbath in chapter 6. That's a bad thing to do, isn't it? Healing a man's hand on the Sabbath day. Well, they counted it as work, but you know. They couldn't make right judgments. They were morally bankrupt. And so Luke tells us that they, at that point, they become Jesus' enemies. Which brings me back to these questions that I asked earlier on. What if they're the ones who'd made this widow poor? The one who's putting these coins in the treasury? Is it any accident that Luke has that passage and about them cheating widows out of their property and then the widow's offering right next to each other, as if the same moment. What if they were the ones that she'd been told by that she had to give these pennies that she had, this last little bit that she had to live on? Shocking, isn't it? And so Jesus isn't popular with them. They try and provoke and trap Jesus. We're told at the end of chapter 11. They begin plotting how to kill Jesus. Chapter 19, start of chapter 22. They condemn Jesus, 22:66, for not denying being the Messiah. Well, how could he? In chapter 3, verse 10, they're there shouting accusations at Jesus in front of Herod. These are the guys who take Jesus to the cross. So what do we do with all of this? We've got this poor widow. We've got Jesus' accusations against the religious leaders. What does all this tell us about giving? Well, the first thing I want to say really clearly is that if you're not yet a Christian, you need to know that Jesus came to bring good news to the poor. You need to know that the amount of money you give to charities or to the church is not going to save you. You can't buy God off with charity giving. You can't pay for a place in heaven by installments. It doesn't work like that. But if you're poor, that's a really good thing, because it means that God doesn't privilege the rich over you simply because you don't have the money to do those things. Whether you are rich or whether you are poor, it is faith in Jesus' charity towards you that will save your life. You see, Jesus isn't waiting for you to follow the myth of the widow's faith, because he only ever tells the rich to sell all they have. And the purpose is always to give that money to the poor. He never expects the poor to give all they have to the rich or to charismatic religious teachers like these guys in the robes and everything. And Jesus didn't come to establish, you know, stone-cold churches that are money pits to maintain. That's not why Jesus came. Nor did he come to make TV evangelists rich so they could flash their Rolexes on the TV screen. You see, the point about giving is this, that God does not need your charity. He never has and he never will. What you need is his charity. Here's a quote from the Bible, one of my favourites. You know the generous grace, or we might translate that charity, of our Lord Jesus Christ. Though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, so that by his poverty he could make you rich. The writer here is not talking about finance, by the way. He's not talking about the money in your back pocket. He talks about making you rich. He's talking about how you need to receive this gift of salvation which has been paid for by Jesus. Saving you cost him everything. He came from the glory of heaven to be born in a stable, live as a homeless man, and then die a horrible execution. So here's the gift. Here's the charity. You don't have to accept it, of course. Just like a drowning man doesn't have to reach out for a life ring. But how sad it is if you are ready to be charitable and do your bit, as it were, but you're too proud to receive the one piece of charity that each one of us desperately needs. Jesus came to bring good news to you. Christian, if you're on a low income, the good news is you don't need money to be saved. If you are already a Christian, this passage raises the questions of how much you should give and why. Let's start with the second one. Why give? I actually think the answer to this question can help determine whether you are a Christian or not yet. So what would you say? Why give? If your answer is because that's what you do in church, or because I was brought up that way, or because I like to do my bit, then you're way off the mark, I'm afraid. In fact, as far as I can see, there's only one good reason to give in church. And it's this: that you love God because you knew that Jesus has died for you and you want other people to be saved and to love him too. Here's another little verse. Ephesians 2 verse 8. God saved you by his grace. Again, we can say charity. God saved you by his charity when you believed. And you can't take credit for this. It's a gift from God. Here's a gift. It's for you. Now what are you going to do? Answer, you give. And the other reason, apart from love for God because of Jesus, falls short because it isn't based on God's charity. You could say, well, people are dying of hunger and thirst and disease and war. We need to give. And all of that is true, and it's really sad, and God cares about it. But giving for that reason makes you a compassionate humanitarian. It doesn't make you a Christian. If Jesus isn't the reason you give, you need to realize just how much you needed him first. I also believe that fact impacts on how much you give. If your giving is motivated by need, that you turn on your TV screen, you know, you're watching Children in Need or whatever it is, and, you know, you see some really sad images, children starving, children in hospital, whatever, that should move you. You'd be hard-hearted not to be, yeah? But if your giving is motivated by need, you will never be able to give enough. Never. Because everything that you have is nowhere near enough to deal with the problems that there are in the world. If your giving is motivated by religiosity, I come to church so I give because we pass around the offering bag. You will be happy to give the amount that you'd already decided you were going to give and no more. If you try and give more, you'll feel like someone's stolen some extra money off you. If you give less, you'll feel guilty that you haven't given the amount that you normally give because it wasn't in your pocket at the time. Things like that. But if you're motivated by God's charity, you'll know that you are free to give as you can, when you can, as much as you can. And that it's his gift of Jesus, it's God's gift of Jesus, and not your little donations that's actually going to make a difference in the world. And that's a really freeing thing. The question of, do I give enough, is never going to come up. It can be really helpful, don't get me wrong. If you're somebody who follows that tithing principle, okay, you take your money at the start of the month, you say, okay, what's my income going to be this month? You take 10% of that, you choose to give that to the church. I say, brilliant, that's fantastic. I'm not criticizing that at all. But you need to know that you're free. so that if something goes belly up in the next month and you can't actually afford to make that tithe, you don't have to. God's not going to think worse of you because of that. It means that when you give because you see there's, you know, there's a famine in Africa and you choose to give £10, or you choose to give £50, or you choose to give £250 if you've got loads of cash, I don't know, that you're satisfied that you've given. And you don't feel guilty because you've not given more. And you don't feel deprived because you've given too much. You're just happy giving and happy being generous. Two last things. A few weeks ago, I introduced a little song. You might remember it. Started off, rich young man came and asked of Christ, "Good teacher, will you tell me?" And we've not been able to do it again since, but I'll try next week to include it. But there's a little line in that that says, "Not what you give, but what you keep is what the king is counting." That's a much helpful way of looking at giving. If you're really careful over how much you're keeping, maybe that's the issue. That's what you need to address. And lastly, just to say this, that the church has a bit of a reputation, not our church in particular, I mean the church generally, as always asking for money. We're always asking for money about something, roof repairs. You know, maybe it is a charitable thing in another country or something. But let's just make out when we're doing giving, that if those at the poorer end of things, those on lower incomes, they want to give a bit, fantastic. But the more that you earn, I think the greater the amount of giving that responsibility falls on you. See, I don't want anybody to be able to say of Albert Rhodes that what we do is devour widows' houses. We have some kind of religious expectation that people are going to come and they're going to give. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you get poor, or you just give because you have to, sort of thing. Because that's effectively what Jesus is criticising, isn't it? Over these religious teachers of the law. I don't want that. I don't want people to make the same comparison of me as Jesus does about these religious teachers. So let's make sure that we're putting the burden of giving on those who have the greatest capacity to give, not on those with the least capacity. So I think that's much more in line with what Jesus is saying here.